there's this quote from Elon Musk that said, starting a company or running a company is like chewing glass and staring into the abyss. And then so we were like, after the first one, after the first rodeo that we did, we were like, oh yeah, you know, that kind of that fits.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Next guest in our Builder series is Drew Gillen, co-founder and CEO of Adesic. Drew's been building in tech since he was little, went through multiple startup iterations, eventually landed on a problem that a lot of people in crypto felt firsthand. The financial system is not built to support how digital assets actually move. In this conversation, we talk about what Adesic is building and why it sits in the space between crypto and traditional finance. Drew shares the real story behind the company, the early failures that shaped their thinking, and how that led to building infrastructure around stablecoin access and global money movement. If you're a builder, operator, or business trying to understand where crypto becomes useful in the real world, this episode will resonate. All right, so Drew, tell me, how you doing, man? Tell me about this beautiful ficus that's sitting next to you there.
Yeah, you like that plant right there? Right. That's a nice one, huh? yeah, that's my girlfriend's plant that her dad grew for her. Other than that, I don't know much about it.
Really? Oh, okay. So are do you live in Germany or are you just visiting?
No, I'm from Providence, Rhode Island. I'm in Germany for the holidays to spend time with their family. They have great, I love their Christmas markets out here.
Right.
It's like, I don't know, very, very unique. We don't have it in the US, unfortunately, but yeah, So we're spending the holidays here.
I don't think I've ever spent the holidays anywhere outside of the US. It might be an interesting juxtaposition.
Yeah, it's very different. I mean, for sure.
Yeah,
a lot of like cultural shocks, you could say.
Yeah.
But no, it's nice.
Do you speak German?
I'm learning German. I probably shouldn't admit this, but I use Duolingo to learn German. So I'm like, I can speak a tiny bit, like a few words.
Like
I can understand. Yeah, ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch, aber meine Deutsch ist nicht perfekt, right? I can speak a little bit of German, but it's not perfect.
Nicht so gut.
Yeah, genau, yeah. So I'm learning, trying to learn a little bit of Spanish as well, but yeah, it keeps my mind active.
It's funny, I think I spent a bunch of time learning German when I should have learned Spanish because I grew up in Arizona, but I wanted to be different.
Very cool.
Right. No, so tell me then, how did you get into involved with Adesic?
It's been a journey.
I like journeys.
Do you want the whole kind of origin story? Okay, so it's been, let's see, I started my first company when I turned 18. So I always knew, like, growing up that I wanted to, I don't know, like, you know, I saw my parents growing up working 9-to-5 jobs. My grandparents, they came home, they're like miserable, exhausted, always talking down about their work. Like they didn't enjoy their life or they didn't enjoy their work right. type of thing. So I didn't really want that. I wanted to figure out a way to kind of carve my own path, build something for myself, wake up feeling good about my life, right? So energized to get to work. And so that's kind of the approach I've taken. So I've always wanted to do this throughout high school and growing up. And then in, 2018.
Sorry, did you always know it was going to be in this field or it was always going to be a startup or what did you
not.
Know?
Yeah. I didn't know anything. I
just
mean,
not a company.
So, Yeah, I had an idea, like, oh, I wanted to do something like this because I remember I saw Bill Gates or like Steve Jobs or kind of these like these prominent figures in tech. Like, I was always interested in technology.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I built my first computer when I was 12. Used to play like Minecraft and like video games on my desktop.
See, I built mine. I did the same thing like when I was growing up, but I'm probably about 20 years older than you. So like, I was building 386s with 33 megahertz processors and 20 megabyte hard drives.
Yeah, I know. So I've always been interested into like the tech side, like the computers, how computers work, like pulling them apart, putting them together. And then I started learning how to code like in high school too. So that's been fun. I've learned like more on my own though, kind of outside of the programming side. But
what programming did they teach you in high school? Just out of curiosity.
We were learning Java and JavaScript. Mm-hmm. We originally started with like no code kind of drag and drop tools. So we like drag, like they make it an if else command,
right,
or if then do this type thing, and you drag it and drop it together on like a website.
But I think in my class, we learned Q Basic, Turbo Pascal, and then C++. I don't think Java was around then.
It was Java and JavaScript. And I don't know, they had us writing it by hand too at some points tests and stuff like this.
Yeah.
What's funny is me and my co-founder took our first computer science class together. So I would always copy his code because he was always a better programmer than me. But I was where I shined in this was flow was kind of like, okay, I'm good at like the presentation side of things. If we need to put together a paper or a PowerPoint,
mm-hmm,
or record a video or a project or something like this, that was my strength, and his strength was like the programming side. So we'd like collaborate that way. Which is, I say, a pretty accurate relationship today of where we stand.
I was going to say, that's sounds like you guys cultivated that relationship early on then.
Yeah, we've known each other for a while. and prior to doing or founding a desk in this company, which is kind of iterated over the years, we were originally doing drop shipping. So like e-commerce advertising agency. I was in college and one of my friends was telling me, he was like, oh, you know, check this out type of thing. And we're like, oh, we gotta, you know, maybe we could put a store together and sell products online and make money and run Facebook and Google ads and things like this. And that was before COVID, early 2020. And, mm-hmm, so that was like the original kind of how we got started into this.
That's
impressive
to do well in that too. Cause I think that was around the time when Amazon had already started squeezing out a lot of the small time, sellers like that, right? Because I had a buddy who used to do that too, and like the margins just disappeared like over time.
I mean, our first, we only really got one store to work. I mean, maybe like one or two that we spun up, and we got it to work, and then COVID happened.
Yeah.
So we were selling like phone cases, and COVID happened, and then the store exploded basically like overnight. It shot up really quickly. We managed to go viral on like through Facebook and Instagram ads and things like this. So a bunch of people were thousands of dollars in orders, all of this great stuff. And then shipping times ballooned to like a month and we started getting chargebacks. So it destroyed the business as quickly as it kind of took off, unfortunately.
Wow. Okay. So that's really interesting. So what was the big takeaways for you then from that experience? Like, what did you learn from that you put towards the next company?
Yeah, definitely the biggest thing is like the product side of it. If you have a shitty product where you don't control the supply chain, you don't control the quality of the product, how it's actually being built, it's not going to do well.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, like you got to have kind of like vertically integrated full end control from my perspective. Because if you sell like a really poorly designed product or something like this, similar to what we were doing, like we were buying from China and then shipping them to the United States and all this stuff, but we didn't have the ability to control the quality of the product. So we're just shipping them right to the customer. And it's like, that was the big thing that we learned by far is like the product and then the people too. Like you got to have like a killer team to like get the job done, because when things start going down, right, and you're getting squeezed, people hit their breaking points pretty quickly, including myself. That was another thing too. Like it was a few friends that we were doing it together, including Zach, my co-founder, that we started that company with. And it's like when things come crumbling down, it compounds.
Let me ask you then. So you started with multiple friends. Are you still friends with all the same group, or did the business end up damaging any of those relationships?
I mean, it gets very difficult, right? When you become like obsessed with a problem and you want to win no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
If your friends or the people you're working with aren't moving in the same direction as you, or they're like pulling you in the other way.
Or they aren't as motivated kind as of you.
Exactly. No. Yeah. It kind of destroys. It doesn't. I don't want to use it. It puts a lot of weight on the relationship.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, me and Zach made it out pretty good.
That's the other guys. I think that's for the most impressive thing is you guys made it out of one business and decided to start another one together. Like, that's.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. Me and Zach have been working together for a while. Like, back to the computer science class days. Right. He's been. We have a good. We have a good, like, I don't know, working relationship. Where our strengths are different, and that's what makes the relationship very strong. It's like he's great in the tech side. I can do the other stuff.
Two things I think that, I mean, one, like being able to recognize your strengths is important in the strengths of your partner, but recognizing your own weaknesses and having the humility is the key trait there. Like to step aside and say, like, you know what, I'm not the best guy for this job. You are. You should do this one. Like, that's tough for a lot of people, especially founders, I think, who want to have their hands on everything. So being able to delegate. Yeah.
It's very important. I mean, because we're a very small team right now, there's definitely a lot of like key man risk. I want to like get myself out of like the kind of the operation. Like, I would love to delegate it. Right. But like, cause we're small, there's a lot going on that needs to be like hands-on per se, but yeah, you're spot on. I would love to just completely replace myself in all of the operations and delegate it to other people, create standard operating procedures, but you're spot on. Like, you got to be able to pass the torch.
Best manager I ever had. He told me that if he had to tell me how to do my job, then one of us is redundant. And I always tried to carry that mentality in my working life. I think it served me pretty well.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk a little bit more then about Adesic then, since that's the one you're with now. Tell me about like what's the problem that you decided to solve? Like, how did you get involved, or how did the 401 Enterprise lead to this venture?
Yeah, absolutely. So after that whole the company exploded, you could say
awesome, by the way. That's a great
yeah. Zach and I decided, like, all right, we want to figure out a way to make money in our sleep. So we're like, all right, naturally the best way to do this is algorithmic stock trading. We're like, okay, we could build a computer to trade the markets for us and make money.
I've talked to Zach so a little bit about that. I've seen some of the things he's been playing with.
So we started down that path. We're like, all right, we're gonna spin up these algorithms. Unfortunately, we never figured out a way to actually get the algorithms to work or make any money. It is very competitive. The big first issue that we ran into was like data collection. So if we wanted to trade the stock market, you gotta pay to download all the historical data from all of the stocks. So that was a big blocker. Around the same time too, this was like towards the end of 2020, you had the Bitcoin and the crypto markets taking off. So we pivoted into trying to do algorithmic crypto trading. We were downloading, you know, because we could get the data for free, basically from the exchanges and the blockchain. And so we downloaded a bunch of data. I remember building like very rudimentary AI like models to try and do these back testing of these algorithms. And they never got out of the testing phases, unfortunately.
So one thing I've learned, it's just an aside here, but most of the successful trading algorithms that like high frequency traders use, like the big desks, they're like small enough to fit on like a note card. Like that's all you need to write the code out.
Yeah, they're
they're ridiculously simple.
It's like the pattern.
It's all about
developing
the speed
of
being able to
execute
it, right? Yep.
Yeah, and then there's that too. Yeah, there's a lot baked into that field.
So it sounds like what you were doing then is while you were pursuing this path, it sounds like you built all the infrastructure you needed to do Adesic. That's kind of a interesting, I guess, happy accident, right?
Yes, yeah, that was the next iteration, actually, you know, because we built all this infrastructure, like, okay, let's try and sell it. So we tried to sell the data to other people. No one wanted to pay for any of our data. That was a very hard sale. We tried to build applications on top of the data, like alert systems, tracking, you know, like large whale trades, crypto transactions, things like this, selling that. No one wanted to buy that either. And fast forward roughly like 2 or 3 years of going through this, just failure after failure after failure, we kind of iterated into, or we found the big problem of like a cryptocurrency on and off ramping, making it easy to move money from your bank account to your crypto wallet. So that's kind of where we started going next, and happy to talk more about
that
too.
Okay. Well, so Let me tell you about an experience that I had with Coinbase when I was trying to make a payment. This was maybe 2 years ago. It was the first time I ever tried to do one. It was like a $100 payment I needed to make to another vendor. And after I set up everything and hit the button, and I kind of had to do it too. Like I didn't really have a choice to like shop around for another one. Gas fees, $43. It cost me $143 to send $100 with crypto. And this is supposed to be easy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, There's a lot. It's not easy, right? In most cases, unfortunately. Yeah. Especially if you're using, I don't know, like a regular, like a DeFi wallet or something like this, or like a MetaMask wallet to send it. I don't know. It can get difficult. Mm-hmm. But that is basically the problem of what we found. It's like, okay, crypto payments, I think long term, this is probably, I mean, the opportunity is just huge, right? Like for me sending, because I'm in Germany, you're located somewhere in the United States right now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If I want to send money to you at the speed of light for a fraction of a penny, the easiest way to do that is like crypto or stable coins or something.
I think
like
that's the only way at this point, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because if I was, I mean, I don't know. The other way would be like sending an international wire.
Right.
That could take 3 to 5 days. You know,
it's going to cost you at least $50 usually to send a wire.
Yeah. Yep. Maybe even more on the, because if I want to get euros, there's the foreign exchange fee baked in there too. So, you know, it takes a long time. But yeah, the opportunity here with like crypto and crypto payments in general, I think is massive. And even like credit cards too. I'd love to see this. I don't think we're not quite there yet in the market, but I'd love to see like more companies accepting in-person payments with crypto, like buying a cup of coffee with my Bitcoin or a stable coin or something like this, because that is like the original idea too of what I was like driven by as well.
Do you think that that's still the future of crypto, that people are going to use it for like everyday payments like that? Like you say Bitcoin, like Bitcoin seems, maybe a stable coin makes more sense to use as a currency. I always look at Bitcoin as being more speculative as opposed to like being something to spend.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, in my personal opinion, I like to stack Bitcoins.
Right.
So I have a little Raspberry Pi that buys me $3 of Bitcoin every day. But yeah, so for me, like Bitcoin, I'd love to, I just want to hoard it but with stablecoins for sure. I mean, I don't know. I just like to use Bitcoin as an example because it makes, you know, people like understand it a little bit better. It's a good analogy, but I think like long-term, because the big issue right now I would say is if I want to go buy a coffee at Dunkin' Donuts, I'm going to go swipe my credit card, and Dunkin' Donuts is looking at like a 2.5% to upwards of like 4% sometimes, depending on the credit card, in processing fees. And in a small little micro transaction of say like a $3 coffee, you know, it's like it can add up, right? And then there's like the flat fees or whatever in the processing there. So if I'd love to see end goal, I take my phone, tap to pay, send them the stable coins, buy the coffee. I think that would be like the ultimate envision of what I could envision of like crypto payments and having that work everywhere. So I do think like from a pure financial perspective of like savings, cost savings per transaction, like crypto is very powerful there, but it's the actually getting it to work in person and then getting the businesses to get that network effect like the credit cards have is very difficult to build.
Right. So where is the roadblocks that you're finding now as you're trying to build this infrastructure?
Yeah. I mean, the first big thing, like, so say that's like the end vision down the line, like the perfect ideal world. The first problem people have after setting up a wallet is getting money into their wallet.
Yep.
Is what we found. And that was like the first big thing. So it's like, okay, I have a wallet. How the hell do I get any money in there? And that's kind of the first problem that we start to solve with the on and off ramping piece is like, okay, you know, I have dollars in my bank account. I have euros in my bank account, whatever it may be. How do I get that actually into my wallet? And that's the infrastructure that we started to build and we have live today. So that's the first problem we chose to tackle.
Okay. So the ACH ramps, on ramps and off ramps are active now?
So it kind of depends. It depends on the customer. The way it works today is our customers will send us wires. So you could send us a wire. We can convert that right into a stablecoin for you or another cryptocurrency and deposit that directly into your self-custodial wallet. And we can do the reverse of that as well. So you could send us, you know, any cryptocurrency. We'll convert that into dollars or euros, send that to your bank account.
Okay. And who can use a desk then? Who are you trying to market this to? Is this for people like me who want to like use it to spend money to buy, you know, a cup of coffee in the morning? Or is this for the small time vendor who's trying to get away from the credit card fees? Or is this for the big guys who can save a shitload of money potentially by eliminating some of those fees?
Yeah. So today we're primarily we're like primarily built for kind of like businesses, but we can work with individuals too. I guess our target audience where the customers will find the most value would be like crypto startups, small to medium-sized businesses, companies that need an easy way to access or manage stablecoins like USDC, USDT, companies that already have a wallet created in most cases, or US bank account or something like this, and they just need a way to, you know, access the DeFi system or the blockchain ecosystem with an easy and simple way. So primarily businesses, we're trying to make it easier to use and then expand the market to everyone. So like you mentioned, adding on ACH on-ramps where, you know, we could pull money right from your account, push off crypto directly to your wallet in basically real time. It's coming soon. It's actually under the hood. To make all that possible is very difficult because, you know, a lot of the payment methods, there's fraud, there's chargeback windows, all of this other stuff. So it's not as easy as it sounds, but we're working to make it easy.
So, yeah, I mean, that's actually, I think, a great point you just made. I mean, you talked about the barriers to entry as being like one of the biggest problems of getting people to adopt at this point. I think that's been an issue that's been plaguing crypto for, you know, probably the better part of the last 15 years. Anything you can do to make that experience easier, or to the point where you don't even have to think about it, where you can just push a button and the money's there, like anything you can do to make that more of a reality, I think it opens the door to more people to use it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, in an ideal world, people won't even know they're using crypto behind the scenes, right? They'll just open the wall, their app, and it works. Similar to the way we like take advantage of email today. You know, behind Gmail, there's like a million different email protocols but we don't even think about it.
Or all the APIs that run on your web pages.
Yeah.
Right. So let's go back to my example then, my Coinbase example, where if I wanted to send a $100 payment to a friend or somebody, what would my fees be looking like with the DESIC?
Yes. Yeah. So we charge roughly around 1%. So for most cases, it would be about a dollar is the fee that we would charge. And then we'd send the $100 directly to whatever wallet you'd like. You send us $100, we'll send 99 USDC, USDT to whatever wallet address you want. And then we like take care of the gas fees. And
how do you do that then? I think that's the question I have. How do you keep those gas fees low? Because sometimes you don't really have control of those, right?
Yes. I mean, it depends on the blockchain too. You know, in some cases, if you're using like Ethereum there's like a lot of network usage. Unfortunately, we can't mitigate that too much. So we try to recommend using like Layer 2, Avalanche Base, Polygon, something like this, or Solana. So it's a little bit cheaper, but we do our best to optimize the gas fees. We work.
Do you have like
a
routing system then, like where you can like choose some different paths to get to the end result, or like maybe you go through this stable coin versus that one, or?
Yes. Yeah, we do. We call it like a smart money routing algorithm. It's more built around the actual currencies that you're looking for. So say you're looking to trade, I don't know, or you're looking to off-ramp, say, some Ethereum, you know, we would source multiple vendors to figure out the best path, and then we do all this in the background, and then we provide you with a deposit address that you'd send the Ethereum to. We would receive it, automatically convert that into dollars for you. And so it's all fully optimized in the back end to get you the best rate in real time. And so we have that in the background. We don't have a gas fee type of optimization engine or something like this, unfortunately. But we do have a smart money routing algorithm based on the currencies and the specific like chains.
Right. Either way, I shouldn't be paying a $40 fee to transfer $100. I mean, I think that's just the bottom line.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you.
Let's see then. So do you have any competitors right now?
Yeah, I mean, this market is huge, right? There's a lot of big companies. You have the major exchanges in the U.S. like Coinbase, Kraken, Gemini. You have other on and off ramp companies like MoonPay or companies like Stripe too. Stripe's entering into the stablecoin game, so we do have a lot of competition.
Stripe's the one who always takes money from my advertising.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like 2.5% plus 30 cents or something like this for the Stripe transaction fee, which is that steep. Mm-hmm. Even their stablecoin fees is steep too. I think it's like 1.5%.
Really?
It's higher than average, yeah.
Yeah. So how do you stack up against most of the other competitors then?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we do our best to focus kind of on this, like our target audience, building out features that they want, things that they ask for. You know, we talk with our customers, we ask them questions, we ask what they want, and then we try to give it to them in the best way possible.
Can you give an example of something that was asked for and you guys delivered?
Yeah, absolutely. So with like with the off ramp, when we first launched our off ramp, we were doing ACH off ramps only. So you send us crypto, we ACH money to your account. One of our early customers are like, hey, could you send a wire? Could you get it same day? We're like, yes, of course. So we implemented that pretty quickly. Other things like this, you know, building out easier onboarding, like the compliance and the onboarding, there's a lot of that. So we like streamlining that by embedding it directly into the app, making it all self-serve so the customers can sign up when they want. They don't have to message us to get links to get activated and things like this. So yeah, we do our best to provide kind of the what our customers are looking for to make it easier for them. And mainly, again, it comes back to like these crypto businesses with these wallets and all these other things. How can we make their lives easier?
Yeah. So I think one of the, let's see, what would be something, if I was a business, what would be something I would want? Probably like a wide, I guess, inventory of coins that you accept. Trying to think of what else would be important to me. Speed of transactions, fees.
Yes.
Yeah. So how quickly are your transactions typically taking? You said instantaneous earlier, but I mean, is it actually instantaneous?
We do our best, as close as it could be, we do it as fast as we can. We'll say that the best we can. On average, it's about same business day. So if you choose a wire, like let's say you want to buy, I don't know, $10,000 of USDC, you send us a wire. The wire clears, we'll send you the USDC, and we could probably do that in roughly like an hour, 1 to 2 hours. If the wire clears same day, if not, it would be next business day. Mm-hmm. For the reverse, when it comes to the off ramp, we give you the ability to choose. So we have like same day ACH, we have wires, and you could choose. Either way, it's roughly about same business day, depending on the time you initiate the transfer.
Also, you may be able to do it the same business day, but the bank accepting the funds may not.
Yes, yeah, that's true as well. Once we send off the payment, then or the wire or the ACH, the bank has to clear it and everything, so it does take a little bit of time.
Right, but that's not your fault.
No, we do our best. I mean, for sure, the three biggest things that our customers have asked for is like support for the currencies they need and they want, and they actually use the low fees, like you mentioned, and then the fast transactions.
Oh, so wow! Those so are the I nailed the three
things. Yeah, you did. Yeah, those are the big three things that every single customer has asked us for. So that's exactly, and I don't think that's going to change anytime in the next 10 years. So like that's what we're optimizing for with everything that we do.
So which coins do you support then?
For the stablecoin side of things, we support USDC and USDT. Those are the big ones that we have the most demand for. I would say USDC drives the majority of our volume because we're a US-based business and we can get one-to-one rates for USDC. Mm-hmm. We're planning to add more stablecoins soon, like RLUSD, some Paxos stablecoins, different things like this. For the other side of the market, so like all of the cryptocurrencies we support, I want to say it's around 90 to 100 or so cryptocurrencies. So all of the major ones, Bitcoin, okay. Ethereum, Solana, XRP, all of the major, you know, cryptocurrencies we can do, and we plan on adding more too.
How hard is it to add a new one if somebody like came to you and said, hey, I'd like Chainbench, Polkadot, Smack to be on next?
It depends on whether or not like the liquidity providers we use support them. So like to get it embedded natively into our app, we source liquidity from a bunch of different places, so it has to be added into one of those markets and then we can do it. Alternatively though, we just launched a OTC over-the-counter trading desk.
Oh, nice.
Where you come to us and you can say, hey, I want to buy whatever coin you just mentioned, and we will go and source it for you on your behalf with like larger transaction sizes. So in that case, we could like, you know, go into Uniswap or PancakeSwap or Jupiter Aggregator and execute the transaction for you and source the liquidity from one of those exotic decentralized exchanges.
Okay. Have you had occasion to do that?
We haven't had to go too crazy, like not so much. I mean, we have had like some really weird inquiries where customers have asked us to source liquidity for like some very exotic long tail like meme coins that have no liquidity on like PancakeSwap or the Binance Smart Chain.
Right.
Some guy came to us with like 20 tokens with all of the addresses, and there's no liquidity. These pools are tapped on these exchanges. So we're like, yeah, we can't unfortunately do this. We get some really weird inquiries too. I got an inquiry the other day from a customer out of Russia saying he wants to do like an OTC desk type of order with Russian rubles, 5 million Russian rubles. Jesus. Like, we can't do that, man. You're in a sanctioned country, right? We take compliance very seriously. And then there's like another weird inquiry too, which is like with the Kazakhstan fiat currency. So I don't know. We can do some pretty exotic stuff, but it's gotta be
legal.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to clear compliance.
Speaking of compliance, then, can you talk to me about this KYC form that needs to be completed now for custody?
Yes. Yeah. So we are a licensed registered money service business in the United States. We're in the process of acquiring our money transmitter licenses. So we take compliance very seriously. We do require KYC, KYB for all of the consumers of the businesses that want to work with us. And this information it's like going to the bank, like JP Morgan Chase going to Chase or like Bank of America and opening up a bank account. It's that same type of information that we collect. So like your name, address, you know, pictures of your ID, facial scans, social security numbers. Unfortunately, we have to collect this information to remain compliant in the US. And, you know, so this is the same thing you'd have to do
if you were like to open a brokerage account or anything else like that as
yes.
well, too, right?
Yeah. You want to open a Robinhood account, Charles Schwab, a bank account. It's the Bank Secrecy Act, the AML, BSA. All that good stuff that we have to follow.
Yeah, there's no more hiding your crypto transactions anymore. The government has learned that there's a lot of money in here and they want their piece.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting too, that we've been working on internally in the last few months is like the new IRS rules for cryptocurrency. There's these new 1099 DA forms coming out from the IRS that we'd have to report crypto transactions. So yeah, you're spot on there.
Oh man, I don't even want to get into crypto regulations right now. Yeah, it can make my head hurt. Let me ask you this then. So if you're going to be collecting all this data, then how are you protecting that data?
Yeah, so we use SubSum as our priority as our KYC KYB provider, and they have everything's fully encrypted. They're fully audited, and we collect all the information through them, process it through them, and the information remains in their closed system, essentially. That's kind of the way we process this. And then we also have...
It's almost like a zero knowledge kind of setup then, where like they have the thing, you just know that they did it and you don't need to know the data necessarily?
In this case, we do need to know the data for compliance purposes. But like we use them to process all of the data and store it inside of their vault, you could say, or inside of their security systems. And that's kind of the approach that we have taken. And then we also have like bank grade encryption as well. If you ask my engineers, they would be able to tell you the exact type of encryption that we use. And then we encrypt the data when it's at rest, at flight, all of this other stuff. So we take security very seriously. We take compliance very seriously. That's what keeps us up at night, actually.
I know, right? Sure. It's like compliance stuff. I mean, how many exchanges have we seen getting hacked? Like, I think people want to know, like, well, do you have a robust plan to try to prevent something like that from happening?
Yeah, I mean, what's great about the model that we've taken to is that we don't custody the funds. So like, you know, we just transmit them. So like the money's being custodied in your self-custodial wallet that you have the keys to, you fully control, or it's in your bank account, you know, so like the bank has the money or it's in your wallet that you control. And we kind of sit in between to route the money and move it and transmit it on your behalf.
It's interesting. Even if you're not maintaining custody, you still have to keep all those forms and compliance things, huh? I thought that was only for custody holders.
Well, technically, we take custody during the transmission piece. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're required to collect all this information.
Okay. I mean, we kind of danced around like how it works, but have we actually like talked about like the nuts and bolts of like how the system actually does what it does?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, asking how... kind of the money routing works or like the sign up process works?
Let's start from the beginning. Like say I want to join, like what would my user experience look like?
Yeah, definitely. So the way you would get started with us is you would go to our website, you'd sign in, you could sign in with Google, for example.
It's a desic.io.
Desic.com. Okay. I think we have a desic.io too. It should route there.
Yeah.
I hope. so you sign up, you'll have your account created. From there, you can poke around in the dashboard. So you could like go and view the different pages and everything. The homepage routing, so a bunch of more features too coming soon. And then if you decide you want to activate your account to get started to actually execute transactions and move money, you click the big activate account button on the dashboard, and then it goes through our onboarding flow, and that's where we'd collect the KYC, compliance information.
Yeah.
And you'd connect your bank account. So in this case, you know, the bank account you'd want to use to send or receive money from, you know, you give us your routing number, your account number, bank beneficiary details, save that in there. And then with the crypto wallet as well, you just give us your cryptocurrency wallet address and then the blockchain. And then once that's connected in, you can start executing transfers. So the way that process works is you, like, let's say you want to buy $1,000 of USDC. We have a little trade form widget that you can use, mm-hmm. and you type in 1,000 USD. We'll output how much USDC we'll send you. We'll show you the rates, the fees, all that good stuff. You click continue. And then from there, we will provide you with the information to where to send a wire to or an ACH transfer to, and you send the money there. We process it in the background and then push the money right off, or in this case, the USDC to your wallet. And it's kind of... we do everything in the background.
Let's say time from when I start to sign up to the funds hit the wallet. What's the time frame roughly?
I want to say like average onboarding for an individual is about 5 to 10 minutes. So it takes about 5 to 10 minutes to activate your account. Granted, there's, you know, you're green and there's no compliance issues there. And then you should be able to trade right after your account's activated. And most transactions take about an hour or so to fully process and clear. So, I mean, you could probably do sign up and, you know, receive money in your wallet in maybe like 1 to 2 hours.
Oh, that's wild.
They're signing up.
That's awesome. All right. I got some questions for you then, just in general, just some fun ones maybe if you're up for that.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so first of all, I wanted to ask you about Adesic then. I noticed that Adesic had a name change at some point. So I wanted to ask you, like, was it hard to accept the fact that the thing that you, because I know what it's like when you pick a name to start with, like you get kind of attached to it. Yeah. Like how hard is it to pivot and decide, like, you know what, maybe this wasn't the best name?
Yeah, no, for context, our original name was Abyss, spelled with a Y. So it was A-B-Y-I-S-S. We went with that name because there's this quote from Elon Musk that said, starting a company or running a company is like chewing glass and staring into the abyss. And then, so we were like, after the first rodeo that we did, we were like, oh yeah, you know, that hits. And then there's like a second part of this quote, which I learned recently. It says something like, after a while, you start to enjoy or love the taste of your own blood from chewing the glass. So it's a very kind of, you know,
right.
Like, it's like, so yeah. We're like, all right, that resonated with us. That's what we founded the company with. But as, you know, things have started to pick up and we've seen more traction and we have to acquire licenses and we're talking to regulators and doing all of this great fun stuff, we realized we need a name that represents us in kind of like either a neutral or in a positive way. So like the word Abyss has like a negative sentiment attached to it. So we're like, okay, as we begin to talk to regulators and you know, larger investors and get these licenses, we need something that sounds at least neutral. So that's why we chose the name Adesic. And the name Adesic comes from, there's this term in physics that I really like called geodesic, which describes the path that light takes in four-dimensional space-time. So like all of light travels in roughly, you know, I'm not a physicist, so I might botch this a little, but light travels roughly in a straight line through four-dimensional space-time. And I don't know, I really like that. It moves very efficiently. And that's kind of what we do at the end of the day. It's like we make it very fast, very efficient to move money from point A to point B. So that's the reason we chose that.
I never put the, when you say Adesic and the what you just said there.
Geodesic.
Yeah, now it makes sense. Now I see it. I didn't notice that before. I like that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Tell me, when did you realize that you guys were on to something with Adesic then? Because it sounded like it went through several different iterations. Like at what point were you like, oh, we got something now?
Yeah, I mean, we're still fighting for our life, right? You know, every day is day one, right? So like, I don't know if we got something. We'll see if we got something in
a few years. That
sounds like you
do. I'm on board.
Oh, I appreciate that, right? But you know, I don't know. It's like you got to operate with a constant sense of anxiety, right?
Right.
You know, you could like, you got 30 days to live, you know, go.
Chew that glass.
Type of attitude. So yeah, exactly. So, but I would say like the first big thing, and this isn't like, we didn't have anything real at this point, right? But like in 2023, when we were first tinkering around with the concept of like building out the infrastructure to do crypto on and off ramping. We went to this conference in Boston called ETH Boston, or like Ethereum Boston. And we, like one of the first few guys that we were talking to, we were like pitching the concept for the product to, and his eyes kind of lit up and he was like, oh, I want that. And I want to integrate that into my business tomorrow. And we're, and me and my co-founder were looking at each other with like smiles on our face. Like that was like the first time we've actually had something like, okay, there's a, there's actually something here.
Yeah.
Because previously it was just like, all right, you know, iteration out of iteration, really struggling. No one really wanted what we were doing. But that was like the first big hit of dopamine. We're like, okay, something's really here. And then I would say too, like when we got like one of our larger first, like larger kind of larger businesses onto the platform where we started ramping volume up, that was pretty big too. When we started doing more than more than $250,000 a month in transaction volume, greater than even like 100K a month in volume was like a big unlock for us after we were like padding, like, I don't know, swimming around with like 500 here, maybe 1,000 a month or whatever. To do 100 grand a month was like a big unlock too. There's like, okay, we're growing. We got to, how do we get more rocket fuel to keep this in motion?
Is the momentum still being maintained?
Yes. Yeah, of course. I mean, we're doing our best for sure. We are growing. Things are going well. I will say that.
What's the next event you guys got planned? I think I saw you guys at Boston Blockchain.
I don't know. There's nothing on the calendar coming up anytime soon. I don't know. I have nothing planned at the moment, unfortunately.
All right. Well, yeah. I got one other question then for you then. Have you landed any big investors, and what did it feel like to like hit that first one?
Yeah, definitely. We closed our pre-seed round earlier this year, in like April or May, and that was like the first really big investor. Boost VC, who was our, they invested in us previously last year. They wrote a smaller size check. They're doing a fund, like a smaller like 50K type of check into these companies, and getting them to invest a larger amount of money was a big deal for us. It was like, because we were, you know, it's that attitude, that anxiety. Like we got 30 days to live, but then the numbers are actually like, the numbers are actually getting to that point. You get what I'm saying? Like the timeline shrinking. So having that extra funding come in was a huge, it was kind of like a bitter, it's hard to describe. It's like a bittersweet moment. It's like, okay, you know, I can breathe a little bit because we're not going to die in the next 60 days.
But
now the game is really on, and how can we make this thing grow as quickly as possible? So yeah, it was a fun, exciting moment, but it was like.
Did anything change for you as far as like your mentality, knowing now that you have someone to answer to? Whereas before, maybe it was just like, you know, you're the guy that has to be in charge, but now you got investors, now you got people that you got to go say, like, here's what we're doing. Like, has things changed for you or the way you operate because of that?
I don't want to say that things have changed necessarily from the way we've operated, like we kind of like answer to our investors per se. I would say Boost VC is an incredible investor. Mm-hmm. Adam Draper, Brayton, Maddie, the team there is awesome. They're kind of like hands off to a degree where they like trust the founder. So it's been incredible working with them, but there is like the pressures there for sure. You know, we gotta deliver.
Man, sometimes the ones you don't talk to are even scarier than the ones you have like touch points with on a regular basis, because you don't know what they're thinking. Like, are they happy? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Yeah. But we do our best. I mean, we're grinding hard.
Yeah.
You know, Christmas is coming up here too. We're like heads down. Right. We gotta,
Oh God. Yeah. I don't want to think about that. I wanted to ask you about Cubic Labs. Were you involved in the Cubic Labs Accelerator program?
Yes. Yeah. We went through the Cubic Labs R&D program in the beginning of January in 2024.
Okay.
Cubic Labs. So after, in 2023, after the ETH Boston, we went to Boston Blockchain Week in 2023. And that's where we met Ian and John for the first time. And we showed up wearing black suits, and we're like, this is like our second conference we went to. We managed to connect with Ian and John, and we were telling them about the product. I think at that point we had like the off ramp basically built out, and we were kind of doing transactions with our friends and family to a degree. And we were telling them about the project, and they're like, apply to our R&D program is what John was saying. And we're sort of like, all right, the very next day we did that. We had a few interviews with them, and we managed to get into the program, and that gave us the funding to actually like launch the initial MVP of the product. So that was huge for us.
Wow. Okay. So I was going to say, like, do you have any recommendations for people? Like, would you tell other people to follow that same path or?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult for me to say like, okay, it's difficult for me to give advice for someone unless I know like what their goals are or where they're at specifically. But what I will say for us, Cubic Labs was a major unlock. We went through Cubic Labs, then we managed to secure like our first angel investors shortly thereafter. Then we managed to secure, you know, that initial investment from Boost VC. So it's been like a series of big unlocks or kind of like domino effects. And, you know, I would say Cubic Labs' program was significant in our journey, getting us to where we are today.
Dude, that's awesome. You said 2024 was the first time you were at the Boston Blockchain. I think that was the first year we covered it. I think I remember seeing you guys do a pitch at that point too. Did you guys do the pitch?
Yes. I think you guys 2024 we did. I believe we pitched at Boston Blockchain. That was the second year we went. And at that point, I think we graduated from their R&D program. And yeah, we did a pitch then, and then we pitched again this year, too, I believe, in 25.
I think I missed your pitch this year, but I saw it last year. I'm curious, though. I wanted to ask you, like, how has your pitch changed? Do you remember what it was like doing your first pitch? And, like, how has things changed, like, from that point?
Pitching is always an iterative process, right? To be honest with you, I don't enjoy pitching, but I do it because I need to do it.
Really? You don't enjoy it? You seem like you like being you have a good charisma. Like, it seems like you enjoy chatting with people.
I mean, yeah, I could talk people up, right? It's the gift of gab, as my grandmother calls it. So I have that characteristic, you could say, but I don't enjoy so much kind of pitching or
what is it
selling
that you don't
people.
Like about it, just out of curiosity?
Well, it's difficult, right? We need, like, right now, in order for me to sell you to do something, right, we need to get into like this kind of rapport. We got to build it up. We got to mirror this, right? And I'm trying to like kind of. I don't know. It's very difficult.
It's hard to do that in 5 to 10 minutes without.
Exactly. With a big audience and everything too. I really enjoy one-on-one conversations like this that's what I really enjoy is like the one-on-one conversations because they're easier to kind of, to talk about. Right.
Right.
But with the pitches, it's like, all right, I do a pitch and then it's like, okay, that's it for today. Right. I gotta go to bed.
Yeah. I know what you mean. So how has your pitch changed from the first one then?
It's changed drastically. We'll say that, right? I mean, this has been an iterative process for sure. So like at the beginning, we didn't know what works, like what resonates with people, like what examples or analogies I can use that other people would understand it, and the way to describe the product and everything.
But you seem smart enough to be able to like pick up on it when you mentioned like the one guy, the first time you had someone whose eyes lit up and like he started paying attention.
Yes.
Like when you're doing your pitches, I'm sure you're paying attention to like when people like look up or when they start writing stuff down and like lean into more of that, right?
Of course. Yeah. And what's even worse is when they do the opposite of that or when they fall asleep. So, right. So that's really what I'm paying attention to the most is like, when are they tuning out? And what did I just say that made them tune out? And then I don't say that again. Right. So that's a big thing for sure. And then emphasizing again, like the dealer stuff that making people understand, or like when they tune in or lean in more.
What's the, like the number one question you get from when you do your pitches?
I would say, a big question too is like, how are you guys different from like Coinbase? You know, what is your competitive advantage? Mm-hmm. Is kind of the gist of that question. That is arguably one of the most important ones. I would say is like, how do we handle that question?
Which I think I asked you earlier, and I think you did all right.
Yeah, I try our best, right? But
like I said,
it's those three things, right? It's those really what for the car customers anyway. It's those three things, and it's like Jeff Bezos says. Jeff Bezos and Amazon have had a similar philosophy where it's like three main things that customers want, and they're going to continue to want for the next 10 years. So we place big bets around those, like getting those things right and doubling down on that, mm-hmm. and that's the approach that we're trying to take too.
That seems like a good approach. I mean, following Bezos' footsteps, you could pick a worse role model, right?
Yeah, it's like the question is like, what is not going to change in the next 10 years? And people are always going to want fast transactions, low fees, and support for the currencies they actually use and need. So we're trying to give them that.
Yeah, and crypto's not going anyway anytime soon. I think we've figured that out. If it survived crypto winter, it's going to survive much longer.
It's a cockroach. You can't kill it.
Well, Drew, this has been a blast talking to you. I've really enjoyed this. Do you have anything else you want to leave us with? Places you want to direct people to if they want to learn more about you and what you got going on?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, if you want to stay in touch with me, you could follow me on X at Drew Gillen. You can see my name right here. Follow me on X and then check out our website too, adesic.com, if you need any cryptocurrency related stuff. And yeah, this was great. Thank you.
It was Drew Gillen from Adesic. What I really enjoyed about our conversation was the behind the scenes look at what it actually took to build his company, the pivots, the false starts, all that stuff that founders usually talk about when they're off mic. If you want to learn more about what Drew and his team are building, check out adesic.com, especially if you're interested in where crypto and traditional finance actually meet. They're focused on the infrastructure that makes stablecoins and global money movement usable in the real world, not just in theory. So again, thank you for listening. Tell your friends. We'll see you all in the next episode. Produced by China Shop Productions.